Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. Things move slowly in the world, and I guess I've been on the air now this coming March for 16 years. And for those 16 years, I've been one of the topics I covered constantly and all the time are issues around our children, crime, juvenile justice, and poverty. And I've interviewed every secretary for juvenile justice and in the state of Maryland for those 16 years, no matter who they are, as they change through administrations. And I'm always yelling and screaming at our secretaries of juvenile justice about why is the ship turning around so slowly? Why are we incarcerating so many black children in the state of Maryland and not finding alternative ways of dealing with children in trouble? And why does it take forever to get this done? And then during the course of the last election, Martin O'Malley became governor. He appointed Donald DeVore as Secretary of Juvenile Services in the state of Maryland from Connecticut. Donald DeVore was from Connecticut and from the juvenile system there. And I called up the juvenile justice advocates and I said, well, tell me about this guy DeVore and what do we expect of him coming to Maryland? And people said, he might be the guy to change things around and start moving the system in a different direction. And my pessimistic attitude was, well, we'll wait and see just how quickly and how things really do move, because I'm always used to things not moving and changing in the interest of our children in the state. But things are moving slowly, maybe a little bit too slowly for Mark Steiner, but we'll talk about that too, in the direction of real change in the state of Maryland for our children, for the African-American children in this community, especially because they're the ones who are incarcerated more than any other children in this state of Maryland and many states. In the United States of America. And one of the questions we always had is why there are not more programs that are in the community and in people's homes as opposed to incarcerating young people. There's a program that we'll talk about here called Multisystemic Therapy, which is a family-based intervention strategy, which keeps young people who have been arrested in their homes with a therapist. We're going to talk about all that and what it costs, how it's being done in the state of Maryland, what it might portend for the future to change the nature of juvenile justice in the state of Maryland, and why we're closing institutions here, what may be taking into place, how long it will take, and how this particular program works. We're joined this hour by Secretary of Juvenile Services, Donald DeVore, who's in the studio. Donald, welcome.
Hi, Mark.
Good
Thank
to see you.
You.
Good great. To have you back, as always.
Great to be here.
And Patricia Redden's with us, who's Program Director for Community Solutions.
Hello, Trish, Mark.
Welcome. Tyrone Langston, the second.
Yes, sir.
I had that right, don't I?
Yes, you did.
Is in the studio with us. Tyrone Langston and his son, Tyrone Langston III, were both subjects of an article last November by Julie Berkowitz in the Baltimore Sun that highlighted this program, multisystemic therapy. And he has joined us as well. We'll try to call out to his son in about a half an hour who had some stuff he had to do, and so he couldn't in the studio, but we're going to try to get him on the phone with us.
Right.
Good stuff he had to do, I should say.
Oh, yeah.
Not
yeah.
bad stuff, good stuff. And we should be joined shortly by Levita Christian, who is an MSD therapist who worked with the Langstons. And folks, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
And you all can join us out there at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, 410-319-8888. People sent me an email earlier. Let me just say this real fast, that I sent an email wondering about Sheila Dixon and her potential indictment. It has not happened yet. If it does, we'll let you know, and we'll deal with it when it happens. Right now, we're talking about multisystemic therapy and the future of our young children and families in the state of Maryland. And speaking of changes of policy, before we get into our discussion here with our guests, let me encourage all of you who care about the state and care about our children and care about the environment, care about our future in this tough economic time, to join me next Wednesday, January 14th, at Phillips Seafood Restaurant in Annapolis from 7:30 to 9:30 a.m. for a 6th annual Annapolis Political Summit. We'll be interviewing the governor, Speaker of the House Michael Bush, Senate President Mike Miller. You can ask any question you like of these men who are the legislative leaders of our state on any issue that matters to you. It's your opportunity. Later will be broadcast live here on WEAA, on SDL on the Eastern Shore, and on WAMU in Washington, D.C. But you can be part of it live. All you have to do is call 443-934-1111 or write to steinershow@gmail.com to reserve your place there. But let's turn to our guest right now and talk about multisystemic therapy. I take it you are Levita Christian?
I am.
Well, let me grab the, pull that mic down closer to you, Levita, if you would.
I'm Levita Christian.
Welcome. Good to have you with
Thank
us.
You.
Who is the MSD therapist. Okay. So now let's jump right into it. And let's talk about what I said earlier. I mean, we've have a history in juvenile justice in this country of incarcerating young people sometimes for the minorest of crimes. When people are screaming in the advocacy community that there are alternatives to incarceration that help the child, help the state, and help the state save money. So talk about this transition, and give us a little background here, then we'll bring everybody else in.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. This is a very exciting initiative for us, evidence-based services. Evidence-based services have demonstrated to be really effective with our kids and families. You hear frequently with institutional care recidivism rates of 70 to 75% over a two-year period of time. And what,
by that you mean kids who are incarcerated and come out and come back to the system again.
Come back in the system again. Right. MST has demonstrated some really significant reductions nationally in recidivism rates, an increase of 70% in success rates with kids, reductions in out-of-home placements for kids, and extensive improvements in family functioning. What has happened is for us in Maryland, recently Maryland was recognized by the National Evidence-Based Society as doing more than any other state for the advancement of this. Over the last year, we've increased over 300% our funding for evidence-based services. And for us, they've been three types: multisystemic therapy, functional family therapy, and multidimensional treatment, foster care. We believe in this so much that we're providing encouragements to counties through things like compacts, where we're sharing cost. For instance, in Baltimore County, which is what we're talking about today, we signed a compact and we said, we really believe that there are kids that are currently going to group and institutional care who can be served by evidence-based practices rather than going to institutions. And there are three benefits that we'll all receive as a result of that. Number one is that we'll have a significant cost reduction in what it costs us to treat those children. Example, the MST that we're going to discuss today on average costs about $10,000 to administer. It cost us over $100,000 a year to keep a youth within a group home, for example. Number two is that we're going to benefit from this because the information that's been produced on this through the RAND Corporation and Peter Greenwood and many other people is that for every $1 that we spend on MST, there's $7 in savings to public safety in the cost of not having to not only incarcerate kids, but police reductions in cost, court processing, and all the other things that are associated with that. And number three, most importantly, is that the long term for this in terms of outcomes is improved family functioning. And I've been frustrated over the 35 years that I've been involved in this business that we send kids out of state, we send them to institutions where we spend $100,000 or $150,000 a year on them. We return them back to that same family, and it's maybe the youth has made some academic gains and maybe possibly some vocational gains, but they're returning back to that same family that was poorly functioning when they left and is poorly functioning when they return. So the focus of MST is a very intensive in-home service to help. It's a skill-based approach to help the families restructure, relearn, and function better together to support one another. Not just the child, by the way, but to support the parents.
Entire family.
And everyone else that's living in the house.
Girlfriends, siblings,
yep.
Who was ever in there. And so the question I have before we turn to other guests is that we're not talking about these young people who are arrested and then put into this program or part of this program are not kids who are on home detention and wearing bracelets. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right. Yes. Right. That's an important little component to this. I want to make sure we understood that. Let me introduce Tyrone Langston. Tyrone Langston is the father of Tyrone Langston,
yes.
Second and third. Tyrone Langston the third was a young man who got into a great deal of trouble. Tyrone Langston is his father.
He started getting into something.
Tyrone, let me ask you a question. I want to do some background here, then we'll bring everybody else in. Tell us a little bit first about you, your son, and how he started getting in trouble, your own lives together, that led up to the point where we'll talk about how this therapy began to work.
It started roughly about maybe 5 or 6 years ago, hanging out with the wrong people, being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and actually being present to get into the trouble in the first place. My story goes back a little bit further than that. I've done quite a few things. For lack of a better term, I haven't always been a law-abiding citizen you see sitting in front of you. But I always had it in my mind that I wasn't going to let him make the same mistakes I made. And him getting into the trouble, becoming part of the juvenile services system and everything, and, you know, going through the things he had gone through, and my whole focus was, by hook or by crook, you're not going to do what I did. And I was so focused on that all I did for a long time was just tell him what he couldn't do, all right? And the first counselor that came in, you know, she, you know, talked to everyone and everything. And like I said, when LaVita came into the picture, it was seamless. It was like she came in and listened to what everybody had to say and basically found out what the problem was. It was a lack of communication. And from what I've learned, it's just about everybody being able to talk to each other and not at each other. We had to learn to find out who this other person was. I knew he was my son, but that's all I knew about him.
Well, in the article I read, it was in The Sun, it talked about you as someone who, in the beginning of your son's life, really wasn't there that much.
No, I wasn't.
Because you were still involved in whatever criminal activity and drug activity you were involved in, so you were not involved in your son's life.
Not the way I should have been.
So when he was young and started getting in trouble, you weren't there?
Not around that time, no, I wasn't.
Right.
When he first started getting himself in trouble, no, I wasn't around at all.
So this all has come back around when this is actually in some ways a family coming back together to wrap themselves around a child and the future.
Exactly.
So I'm curious now. I want to come back to how this might work in a larger scope in our society and in the state of Maryland, what the future of this is. But I'm going to talk to LaVita Christian for a minute, who is a multi-systemic therapist. Do I have that right?
You're right.
Good. Talk a bit about the who you are, your training, and what your work was with his family.
Okay. I have a master's degree in family counseling, and I've been doing MST since 2002. 2002. And when I met the family, another therapist had already been in for, I think, about 2 months. She left, and I inherited the Langstons. And when I came on board with them, he was being parented by two people. That was his granddad and his dad. And although Mr. Langston will tell you he wasn't there in the beginning, he was real forthright when I came into the home that he wanted to help his son. His dad at the time was quite ill and couldn't do as much as he wanted to do, you know, with Tyrone Jr. So what I began to notice is that there was two styles of communication and two styles of parenting that was going on. So what I had to do was look at what they were doing and try to get them to see that they could do this, but do it a little bit different and in a method that would better serve Tyrone Jr. Because he had to learn to listen to one voice and not multiple voices.
What's interesting to me here, we're talking about young people who have been arrested, that instead of going to jail, they stay in their home with their family. And as I understand, the therapist comes to the family at numerous times, maybe during a week. He's on call 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
Whenever I had to call her, she was always there. She gave me the cell number, the work cell, and her home phone, just in case I needed to get in touch with her at any time. She was always there.
So I guess I might ask at the end of the hour just what the burnout factor is for a job like yours. But what I'm interested in is, I mean, this is when people think of therapy, they think of models that are either group therapy in a session, an institution, or kids coming together in outpatient. They think of one-on-one therapy goes on once a week, and you deal with the therapist, and then it's over the next week. Excuse me, it's 7 o'clock, and the session's over. You got to go. We'll finish this next week. But we're talking about something extremely different here. This is something where the involvement of the therapist and the therapy is ongoing, as if you were, in a sense, almost in an institution, in the sense that it's around the clock. It's always there. Mm-hmm. This is something very unique and very different.
Yes.
If I could say it like this, it doesn't change your life for a moment. It changes all the moments in your life, period. It's ongoing. It just keeps going. Even after, you know, quote unquote, the time of therapy was over, as far as being officially over, the lessons learned, the experiences that we got behind it, it's constant. It's changed our whole life.
So, Patricia Randall, we haven't heard from you yet. Let's begin this conversation, if you mind. And talk a bit about your role in all this and what the Community Solutions Program is for the Department of Juvenile Services and
Well, currently as a program director, what I'm doing with the county overall is I'm going out and I'm continuously educating the public and bringing awareness to MST services and the benefits of the services to include the cost savings. And we talk about the intensity of the services and going into the home environment and working within the home environment, which is extremely important to the success of the families in the program. It's also extremely important to the fidelity of the model to ensure that there is success and there are successful outcomes. So my role is, at the time, was as the clinical supervisor, now program director, was to oversee all of the clinical functions and making sure that the therapists were adhering to the model and that the family's needs were being met. And so, just as they're on 24/7, I too am on 24/7.
I mean, what is it? I'd like to figure out what it is, why this program has been so successful. It's a model in 15 states, I understand, that has been probably one of the most studied programs in terms of outpatient or kids who are remaining in the community programs as opposed to institutionalized programs studied in the country. There's no question about success in other places. People have a real hard time maybe believing a recidivism rate as low as the one mm-hmm. that's being talked about in this program. Well, why?
Well, if I could just jump, one of the reasons is
Donald DeVore.
That this program, the originators of this program, require you, if you're going to get an MST or an FFT license, for example, to maintain a very high level of fidelity to the program standards. And that's very important because what I've observed over the years is frequently there's something that works. Someone goes to replicate that particular program, but they might tweak it, Mark, just a little bit or just change it a little bit here. In this, you can't do that. Part of your licensing fee requires you to submit your data, your information, requires you to make sure that your staff as the therapist here are appropriately trained in the model and continues to observe the operations to make sure that they're maintaining the highest level of quality assurance and fidelity to that. This is also supported by a lot of research and information about families. And I think that's what's made it different. To start up one of these programs, just to start it up, costs about $200,000 to bring the staff, have them trained, to be able to bring the administration on board. Before they can even start seeing their first kid, they have to demonstrate that they understand the program model and that they're capable of delivering those services. For us at the Department of Juvenile Services, we layer yet something else on top of that through our quality assurance. We're constantly interviewing families. We're constantly looking at data because it's critically important for me as secretary that I can not only generate these cost savings, but I can do the thing that is my primary responsibility, which is improved public safety. So we have to see out of this those benefits, not just that cost saving, but we have to see that improved family functioning that results in these kids getting involved in less incidents.
But what about people who say you can have all the programs like this you want, but unless there are kids going back to school, unless there are jobs for kids or jobs for parents, these programs just won't work. I mean, in the long run.
Actually, me and myself personally, I think that the money that you
Tyrone
save
Langston.
By, I'm sorry, yeah, it's me. I figure like this. If I can spend a dollar here and treat an entire family, and that saves $7 somewhere else, then that can be put back into education programs and jobs and furthering education, even college tuition. All right, but from the state, because they didn't have to spend that $7 to pay someone to lock the child up, give him what they call rehabilitation. That's my own opinion. It's not anything I heard. Then medical care, electricity, whatever resources it goes to house a child is being saved. So fiscally speaking, this is way more responsible than just locking a child up and then sending him back into the same environment that he came from. That's why we got such a high recidivism rate. You can't send somebody back that's been changed into the same environment and expect the change to take hold. They're going to revert because they're only going to get what they've always gotten. They're going to revert because they're being treated the same way. It's about, for me and my family, it was about opening everyone's minds and allowing them to see that the human personality is a continuously evolving thing. It's not static. I learn who my son is every day. And I actually found it amazing to actually get to know him all over again.
Well, I mean, I'm going to follow up on what you just said. Let me tell our listeners that the number here is 410-319-8888. We're talking about a program called Multisystemic Therapy that is being instituted by the Department of Juvenile Services here in the state of Maryland as an alternative to incarcerating our youth. It has only affected so far about how many?
Well, now we're going to have, just for instance, talking about...
But how many now so far? So we'll come back to the exact numbers in a minute. How many families so far have been affected?
I'm not certain, but I would say there's probably at least 400 to 500 families that have been affected by this.
So these are 400 or 500 kids who could have gone to prison, juvenile prison, but instead they stayed at home and had this intense therapy. The recidivism rate is what?
Our recidivism rate for our kids that are sent out of state, who are considered to be some of our highest risk youth, a 2-year study of that done, in excess of 70% of those youth within 2 years are entering back into our system in some form again.
But in this program?
In this program, it's a 70% success rate.
Success rate. The exact opposite, the mirror image of that. So we're talking about how that program could be, what it does exactly in the state of Maryland, what it does for families, how it can be expanded. Your thoughts on that? Because many of you are clearly thinking that if you commit a crime, go to jail, because you got to be locked away to make the rest of us safe. As you hear this conversation unfold, think about your families, your friends, your community, how this might work. Is this the way we want to go as a state? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Tyron Langston, so I'm interested in, just for our listeners to get a feel for exactly how this works before we get a larger kind of statistical analysis of this, is what exactly happens? I mean, what are the issues that you deal with when Tyron Langston, the father, and Tyron Langston, the son, are sitting with LaVita Christian, the therapist, in their home, who's on call 24/7 to deal with your family issues? What happens? I mean, I'm not getting into your personal business. I'm not at all. But I mean, just what happens? What are the dynamics? I mean, what do you deal with? And how does it really change? Because it seems to me, the way you're describing it, Langston, is it really has changed you.
It did.
As much as it seems to might have changed your son, it's done something to you as well. I'm going to talk about what that dynamic is all about internally. If you all can describe that for me.
Like I said, the best way I figure I can say it, it taught everyone in my house, in my family, that instead of talking at each other, we had to talk to each other. We had to learn who the other person was. You know, like I said, I knew that he was my son, but I didn't know who he was. All right, and a lot of that had to do with me not being around the early part of his life, but you can't just say, I'm your father, you my son, and you're going to do what I tell you.
Right.
You just can't do that. And
we all learn that, don't we?
Man, I don't even talk about that part. But another thing, and LaVita talked about it, was, you know, it was two different parenting styles, okay, me and my dad. And teenagers are real smart, and they know that they can play people against the other to get what they want, all right? The problem with my son was he didn't realize that my dad taught me before he taught him. And I knew what he was doing, and I wasn't going to stand for it. But the problem with that was I got angry because he was trying to get over on me.
So if your son said to people in the beginning when he was arrested and was just starting to talk to a therapist that he had an issue with anger, I read that your son said that he had an issue with anger. Mm-hmm. The father also had an issue with anger.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody, the families have issues with anger. So when you walk in, and not just in terms of this family, LaVita Christian, but when you walk into a family, I mean, there are a lot of families for lots of reasons of drug abuse, parents having done time themselves in prison, lack of jobs, no money, a poverty, the intensity of people's surroundings, especially in some deep inner city neighborhoods, that there's a huge dysfunction that's going on, probably maybe more dysfunction than existed in the Langston house. I mean, huge dysfunction. So how do you begin to get under that? How do you begin to turn that around? I mean, that's something that people all over say is impossible to turn around.
Well, the first thing that happens is instead of looking at the negatives, I already know coming in what things have transpired in the family. I'm already acutely aware of the negatives. So I go for the strength, and MST is strength-focused. We don't delve as much as in the past as we do what's going to happen in the present and the future. So knowing that they had some anger issues and not having an understanding how to resolve the anger, looking for the things that are strength focused for them. And the first thing I identified is that this was a unified family. believe it or not.
Grandfather, father, son.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was three generations, and although, just as he described, young Tyrone knew how to play one against the other. So unifying father and dad to make them strength focused that, okay, we're going to play on his strengths and not his weaknesses. And much of the time, Tyrone Sr. Would, you know, refer to his son. You know, he'd often defer to him to give him that role to step up to, and he did very well with it. You know, so that was his strength, that he could be dad, and he could help his son. And I think his son began to see him differently, not just the guy who came back in town, who's living in the house, who says, I'm dad. But he actually was dad.
So your son, Tyrone, was raised by your father?
My mom and my dad.
By your mom and your dad?
Yes.
Okay. Which is not an untypical scene in our world today with young people being raised by grandparents instead of parents.
I'm not the only person I know that has lived my life the way I have.
Right. Exactly. But you've come back.
Had to. I grew up.
Takes some time sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. I think I actually grew up at the age of 35.
Whenever it comes, it's a good thing.
Yeah, it was cool. It's not too bad being an adult. I found out something. Actually, it was Tyrone who actually propelled me to getting my own life together. He had made me mad. I really can't remember what it was for. And I looked at him, and he was 12 at the time. I was like, when are you just going to grow up? When are you going to be a grown-up? And he said, I'd rather be an adult. I was like, what you mean? He said grown-ups had too many problems because they think they know everything. Adults just handle their business. I stopped everything I was doing that day and just started doing what I'm doing now. That was it.
This is what your son said to you.
I had to handle my business. It was that simple.
So, I wonder how it works. I mean, because I understand that it also involves bringing in extended members of the family, whether it's girlfriends or boyfriends who are part of the family or grandparents, other people who may have interaction with the family. This is not just simply people who reside in the house.
Absolutely. These are people who are a part of their environment, their ecology. These are people they're familiar with. And when MST is gone, no longer a part of them, these are the people who are going to be around them in a constant figure. So working with everybody who is in the family, you know, helps to build that building base, that there are other people who do understand, and they have been working with me, so they know everything I'm going through.
So, I'm just curious, before we turn back to Donald DeVore and Patricia Wren, is your motivation for this? I'm only asking this is because this is not a typical therapist job,
no,
where you're making $85 to $100 an hour and see 10 patients a day and then then go home at night and have your martini and be done with it. Not to put that down, there's a lot of great therapists in this world, but this is a job that requires a huge amount of dedication and time beyond.
Well, let me say, I was a traditional therapist since 1989 to 2002. So I understood what it was to work in an office, in a clinic, have folk come in, show me the face they wanted me to see, give me that hour, and then they were gone. And the rest of the week, I wouldn't know what was going on until they came back. With MST, I am in their home. I'm wherever they are, their school, the court. I can attend the probation meetings with them. So I'm acutely and, you know, keenly aware of what's going on. So the difference is that because I'm there in a multifaceted way several times a week, they have more access to me and more access to my training.
We're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about systemic therapy with the therapist herself, Levita Christian, Donald DeVore, Secretary of Juvenile Services, Patricia Wren, Program Director for Community Solutions, Tyrone Langston, the father of Tyrone Langston Jr., who was a young person who was arrested, and their family was part of this program, and how it changed their lives and became a different program, a different way of living. We're going to talk about how this might reform our entire juvenile justice system when we come back. Join us here at 410-319-8888 or write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Reminding you on the way to break, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. Hello, Howard Steiner, welcome back. One thing I didn't do at the very top of the hour was something I should do before I reintroduce our guest, which is say congratulations to the Morgan State University basketball team. The Bears beat the Terps.
Hey, hey,
hey. Yes. All right. So I had to put that out in the air. Little props out to our team here at Morgan State University. Terps walked in and didn't know what to expect. They didn't get what they expected anyway, and they lost, and the Bears won. So let's get back to our conversation in the air. I just had to say that before the hour is out. We're talking this hour about multisystemic therapy. As we said at the beginning of the show, that there are, for years now, the juvenile justice system has been trying to turn itself around under lots of different men who have led that agency. And it incarcerates many too many young people who could be changed, helped, and turned around by staying in the communities, staying with their families, or at least staying in the communities. And how do you do that? How do you spend the money in a different way? How do you spend money on helping children as opposed to incarcerating children and working with their families at the same time? One of those programs that's been brought into this state by Donald DeVore, one of our guests, who's the Secretary of Juvenile Services here in the state of Maryland, is multisystemic therapy that has proven themselves across the state, across the country, to work to turn lives of families and children around without incarcerating them. 70% of the children who go through our juvenile justice system get arrested again, get in trouble again with the law. 70% of the young people who participate in the multisystemic therapy program in the state of Maryland do not get rearrested, but begin to rebuild their lives. How does that happen? It's cheaper than incarcerating them, so how do you spend that money instead of money for bricks and mortar and putting people in jail? We're talking with Secretary DeVore, with Patricia Wren, who is Program Director for Community Solutions in the Department of Juvenile Services. We're talking with Levita Christian, who is the multisystemic therapist who has worked with one of the families. The father is here, Tyrone Langston Sr. His son was the one arrested, Tyrone Langston III, who could not be here. We'll talk about why he's not here in a minute, which for a positive reason, not a negative reason. The number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. A caller is called in. Let's go to the phones first at 410-319-8888. And Sal in Laurel, you're on the air. Hi, Sal.
Hi.
You're there.
Hi, how you doing? My question is, how far extended is this program to basically people who are in prison now or in jail now that they'll be paroled or have been in? For instance, I have my brother who's been in prison for approximately almost 12 years now, and he's soon to be paroled. And his daughter is going through that teenage phase right now where, you know, without a father in the house, she's doing whatever she wants to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, unfortunately. And the mother is, you know, she's trying her best, but she can't do, you know, the same as a man can, basically laying down the law. And this sounds like a program that she could probably use, and even to help my brother come in, you know, come back into society without, I don't even know how to express it.
To be able to reintegrate it back into family and society again, is what you're saying.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And, you know, to at least be able to come out and assist his family in a proper way. Because after being in prison for 12 years, I don't think there's much that you can say to a child. You know, you can't, like the gentleman earlier said, that his father didn't know how to talk to him. And that's what I'm afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
That he'll come out and all hell's going to basically break loose with the two of them.
I understand the fears you have exactly, but let me turn to some people. I don't know that this program exactly can answer those questions, but perhaps while you stay on the line for a minute, Secretary DeVore and perhaps even Levita has some thoughts. I don't know, but Secretary, you want to start?
Well, start to say that unfortunately this program right now that we're talking about, both multisystemic therapy and functional family therapy, is reserved for children that have been referred to our court system. There's no question about the fact that there are many other categories, including the one that's being described by the caller, where people might benefit from something like that. But right now, the funds that we have available and the number of slots that we have available are reserved as alternatives for children within the juvenile justice
juvenile offenders.
System.
Yeah. Sal, let me suggest this to you, and it looks like Tyrone wants to say something to you, but before you hang up, if you give my producer your telephone number, I will call you tomorrow with some names and numbers of people and organizations that are working on this very thing you're worried about and might be able to help you, your brother, and your niece.
Thank you. you.
So please don't have, and I will call you tomorrow. I'll give you a list of two or three agencies, friends of mine that I know work in this world, and they might be able to help you with what you're going through, and maybe help stem some from family disaster from happening. I'll do my best. But Langston, you wanted to say something before we have to go next, Tyrone. Yeah, I mean,
Sal, you may be able to ask your brother to access some of the resources that he may have for people about to re-enter society coming out of prison. There are parenting classes. There are support groups. There's a lot of things that he can look into himself. And you could possibly help look into him, you know, from the outside. So it would be like a two-pronged attack as far as him being able to reintegrate himself, not just into society, but back into his family life. And if all else fails, give him my number.
I'll talk to him.
Please,
you can give Justin, pick up the phone, my producer, and give him the information. I promise I'll get right back to you. All right, Sal, so take care. 410-319-8888. Jeffrey in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, Jeffrey.
Hey, you know, and hi to your guests. You know, this is a very interesting program. And I guess I have a short comment and a question. I guess the comment is, you know, I used to hear a lot of people talk about the problems in school systems and the recidivism rate. And I used to be like, why don't they seem to understand that it's the home environment that really mm-hmm. generates these mm-hmm. problems? So I see this program is attempting to address that. And I'm hoping that sometime when we as a society go smarter, we will begin to understand systems approaches to things, and then we'll start looking at, well, how do we improve the school system? Because everyone who talks about improving schools always seem to think you need a better teacher, when in reality, I think you really need a better home front, and this program seems to be addressing that on one end. The other question, that I have is, you talk about a 70% success rate, and so I guess my question is, over what period of time? I mean, how long have you followed these students, or these juveniles, and how long, are we talking about a two-year span or a three-year span or longer in order to determine that this 70% success rate exists?
Mm-hmm. Good question, Jeffrey.
Yeah, Don DeVore. First of all, you know, kudos to your first comment. I couldn't agree more. The second one is, you know, we generally have supervision of kids up till the age of 18, and that's where we're able to track them. So in many of our kids, their age 14, 15, 16 years of age, we continue to track them. So the data is generally over a 2 or a 3 year period of time.
And so will you track these young people as they get into adulthood?
We generally don't track them as they get into adulthood, but that is something that we would like to do, because there's a whole group of young adults that we're missing, which are what we call youthful offenders between 17 and 22, 23 years of age. And that may be a subject for another program, but we're doing a lot of things right now between juvenile services and adult corrections, probation and parole, to make sure that we have services available. And this type of service is something that they could benefit from enormously.
Jeffrey, thanks for your call. I think it's a really important question. And you can go to our website and see some of the articles that have been written about multisystemic therapy, and we have some studies there that you can see what happened in other states to see how it's been effective and why it's here. Then they've had a longer time to look at this, where the success rates have been about that 70% margin. You can see how that works. Before we turn back to our other guests, Tyrone, I wanted to ask this. Tyrone Langston, we asked you, well, first of all, we expected Tyrone Langston III, your son, to be here as well, since the therapy involved all three of you. He didn't post, and I asked you why he wasn't here, and you're about to tell us why.
Today, well, Tyrone is actually going to take part in the Free State Challenge program. It's through the National Guard at Aberdeen Proving Grounds. And it's a 17-month program with 5 months being spent on the base. You're going to live like he's in the Army, basic training, stuff like that. They're also going to help him to obtain his GED, certify him in CPR, and, you know, things of that nature. But the reason he's not here today is he had to get a physical, you know, to go into the program. But he also had to pick up some old school records, his shot records, and things like that. And he was actually up about 4:30 this morning because he was excited to be going to, as I like to tell him to do, handle his business. And I think he got home about maybe 10 or 15 minutes before I got here. He went to sleep already. So he's just done for the day. He's done.
That's all right. So
I'm proud of what he did.
Good story.
I mean, he did it himself, you know. And One of the reasons I think that that happened like that was because of multisystemic therapy allowed him to realize that he can do things on his own. He can make intelligent decisions and act out on them and actually, you know, formulate a plan, stick with it, and actually progress instead of constantly starting over with a new plan almost every day.
So what does it take to take something like multisystemic therapy and programs similar to it and make that the operative system of the day as opposed to incarceration for first and second time or third time offenders?
Great question. And that's what we're all about right now. we're trying to provide the evidence that we can, in fact, reduce the number of residential slots that we have within the state. I'm going to give you some specific examples. Increase public safety and improve functioning among families over a long-term period of time. Because of the current budget climate that you're all too well aware of right now, this has been in many ways viewed by me as an opportunity. We recently took a facility, a 55-bed facility, a private facility that was being operated in Howard County, and we closed that facility, about a $3 million savings to the state.
Costs us $3 million a year to run that,
about
is that what you're saying?
$3 million, yes. I asked to take $1.5 million from that and use that to expand FFT and MST services.
FFT is?
Functional Family Therapy, to serve those same youth that would have been served in that institution. Mark, you remember, and I remember as a federal monitor here in Maryland, when we had 300 kids at Hickey. I was there Monday night. We had 49 kids. You remember when we had 200 to 300 kids at Cheltenham. We're running about 90 there right now. The Justice Center many times was overflowing with kids. We've closed down two units at the Justice Center to open a Boys and Girls Club there for the kids that are there. So we're starting to see some real significant changes, very significant changes, in what I would have considered Maryland's over-reliance on residential care and a move in this direction. For our girls, we just started a third evidence-based practice called multidimensional treatment foster care, which is also one of the evidence-based models. And we've started that in Baltimore County, and we're hoping that will help make some real inroads and reductions in the number of girls that we have in residential care as well. So the change that I so much wanted to see as a federal monitor, that you so much have wanted to see as an advocate, is taking root. The types of shows like this to get the message out to all the people that are concerned and interested in children about the fact that we have programs that are successful, that are meaningful, and can make real life changes for families is a really great story. I was mentioning earlier about Baltimore County. In Baltimore County, we went to the county with a foundation. We've had many foundations approach us. This was Safe and Sound Foundation, Hathaway Furabee. And they said, we believe so much in this, we're willing to put up the seed money of $200,000. We take kids that judges are referring to group homes. We refer them to the MST provider. When the MST provider agrees to treat that youth rather than send them to that group home, we then split that savings with the county. So if it's $100,000 for a group home, $10,000 for MST, $90,000 difference, that's a $45,000 saving for each youth and family they're successful with, they can go back to the county to reinvest in an expansion of more evidence-based services. So this is really catching on. Maryland's receiving a lot of recognition for the fact that we're willing to take that step, close down some residential beds, and say, we really believe in this. We think it's the right type of investment to make for kids and families.
And Jim Smith, I remember a couple years back, was telling me about this. And he was advocate of this for a long time.
Still is.
County executive. He said, that's what we're going to take. Other jurisdictions didn't seem to want to, but he said, let's take the risk and do it here in Baltimore County.
Yeah, Jim Smith has been a wonderful partner with me in so many things, but especially on these evidence-based services. And we also had not just Safe and Sound, the Crane Foundation. And we have a lot of other foundations within the city of Baltimore that are interested in seeing these things work.
So now, who gets in a program like this, and who cannot get in a program like this? I mean, and what what are the parameters that allow a young person to say, "Okay, you're not going to be incarcerated. You're not going to Hickey. You're not going to Cheltenham. Instead, you're not going to go downtown. You're going to instead be in multi-systemic therapy."
Well, we're responsible for making the referrals. We make the referrals to the provider. In this particular case, Community Solutions, that's here now. I have to say that few of those youth are rejected, but sometimes there are some concerns that they might have.
Like what? What would keep a young person from being in a program like
this?
Well,
I'll let the provider respond to that.
Patricia Wren?
Well, if the primary offense and the only offense is serious sexual offense, we would probably reject them. And age is a factor, so oftentimes we'll get an 18-year-old referral, and our program supports the ages of 12 to 17. So
the young people who, let's say, so it's not limited to people who are, you can be a first, second, third, or fourth time offender?
Sure. With other charges.
With other charges?
Yes.
And it can be a violent charge?
Yeah.
So not just nonviolent crimes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
No, because a lot of programs will say no. Right. If it's a violent crime, a crime committed with a weapon, a crime committed that caused violence, then, or an armed robbery, that you will not be allowed to be part of this program.
No, we take high risk children that are definitely.
So how do you all justify, from the other end, of people saying, "Well, wait a minute, here's a kid who caused a violent crime, and you're not going to put him in jail?
Well,
you have him stay home with his family, have therapy." So that I can hear people asking that question.
And that's an excellent question. And we all have to make an assessment of risk. Our Department of Juvenile Services, which may be a subject for another time, is also moving to what's called evidence-based risk assessments as well, which gives us a reasonable understanding based on risk, strength, and need of a youth and a family, whether or not we think that they would be conducive to something like this. The thing that I want to say to all of your listeners before we go out too far afield on this is that, as I've mentioned, our primary obligation is for public safety. And if there's a youth that's out there that really represents a serious risk to public safety, they very well may not be referred to a program like this. It is possible that they may have to go into a residential program of some kind for some period of time, because I don't have to tell you, we have 47 youth this past year in Maryland that died as a result of homicides.
Right.
You know a great deal because you have programs about the levels of violence both within Baltimore, Prince George's, and many of our other communities. And if there's a youth that we think is really a bad actor, and represents that serious risk, they're not going to get referred to a program like this. But there are many other circumstances that allow us to refer kids to these programs. We have to have the agreement of the family. The family has to be willing to participate.
Yes.
That's an important factor. We have to have the agreement of the judge. The judge has to agree that our case managers that have been working with the families have to agree. But the fact of the matter is, when you look, Mark, at a lot of the kids that are in residential facilities nationwide, you know that many of those kids that are in those facilities are not there, in fact, for those violent and serious offenses. Many of the kids that are committing the violent and serious offenses are being waived into the adult system.
Right.
And I want to talk about the violent and aggressive kids here and how you approach them in terms of therapy and families. But let me open the phones again at 410-319-8888. We're talking about multi-systemic therapy, a program that is being run by our juvenile justice system here in the state of Maryland that's as an alternative to incarceration. The program here in Maryland is to try to end incarceration as much as possible for young people, find a different way of turning lives around. This involves entire families, has a 70% rate of success, which is almost unbelievable to believe, but I've read the studies over the last few days, and they seem to say the same thing, whether it's here or in any other state in the United States of America. 410-319-8888. Catherine in Northwest Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Hi,
can
Catherine.
I speak now?
Welcome. You're on the air.
Well, number one, I think it's commendable and applaudable that you're doing what you're doing at this point of time in our history. But there will always be court-adjudicated adolescent males and females who require a secured residential environment, and it should be in-state. They should not be transported out of state. I happen to have had a very illustrative career in the state of Maryland for 38 years Adolescents are my specialty. Character disorders are my specialty. And we were doing what needed to have been done prior to the shutdown, the political shutdown of the Hickey School. And I just think that you're missing the boat if you don't talk to some of the people within the juvenile justice system ranks, rank-and-file employees and supervisory mid-level people who have the knowledge of the history of Baltimore County and all of the states and the populations there, too, before you categorize all of the youngsters as being suitable for this low-level management. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think we should let Donald DeVore take a crack at that one first. Go ahead, Donald.
Well, first of all, thank you for all your years of service to kids and families. But Hickey School is open. It's open as a detention. It's open as a detention facility. As of this moment in time, we do have, you're right, about 110 youth that are out of state. But let me just tell you that in the last legislative session, the legislature did approve a $200 million appropriation for us to replace Hickey, replace Cheltenham, with the development of small Missouri-like treatment facilities, each of them being 48 beds. I agree with you. There is, in fact, a need for secure care for some youth. Fortunately, it is a small number of youth, nothing like those hundreds that were held at those facilities in years past. But when you identify those kids and when you provide that service, it has to be done in modernized, clean facilities with the best possible trained staff and the best possible treatment methods available to you. Maryland has not had a history of that. I mean, if we want to be honest about it, with the advancement of these types of programs that we're talking about that we have said are not for everybody, and the combination of the capital program that we're moving forward with, we will be able, I hope, during my administration, to have no kids out of state. That is my goal. My first goal is treating Maryland's children in Maryland.
I don't want to come back to it another day because I'd like to know why we even have kids out of state now. But we can talk about that. That's a different discussion.
Small group. But we have some. One time there were 600. There's 110.
This is a lot less than it was when you first walked through the door. Be able to say that.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about how then you, what Catherine was just calling in about, Patricia Wren and Levita Christian. So how do you approach young people and their families if, in fact, this young person committed violent crimes, was a corner kid who got into a lot of trouble, broke some serious laws, was in danger of committing violence, had committed violence against others. So how do you begin to approach that in a way when a child is not incarcerated? What do you do? I mean, what's the approach to it? I think people would love to hear that.
Well, part of it is that most people that we are, you know, have been referred to us always believe the therapy is for the child. And, you know, it's like I'm being punished by therapy. But once we convince them that this is just not for the child, but the whole family as well. And a lot of times our kids are being indoctrinated into, you know, gangs. They're being recruited for lots of kinds of behavior. And one of the things is to get in and make the parent aware, and that maybe as a family system we can stop that before it escalates into a more violent crime. In gangs, you're expected to perform violent acts. That's a jumping in process.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the parents don't even have a clue what those things are. They see the kids throwing up signs, wearing paraphernalia, but they just think it's sort of faddish until we educate them about what's going on.
So I'm curious about how far and fast you think, in less than a minute, Donald, you think this program is going to, these programs like this will take hold in your juvenile services system so they become the rule of the day as opposed to incarceration?
Well, as you know, we see about 53,000 families that are referred to the Department of Juvenile Services statewide. only a small percentage of those children, fortunately, are involved in lawbreaking to the extent that they might benefit from programs like this. We've increased the funding over the last year by 300%, as I've said, by looking at some smart strategies of using foundation funds and closing institutions. We're going to continue to press that forward over the next year. And bring on some other programs that I hope in the future we can talk with. Like, for instance, just one example, nurse family practitioner.
But we'll come back to that another day. Tyron Langston, first of all, thank you for coming in and sharing your story. It's been a pleasure to meet you. And congratulations to you and your family.
Thanks.
And Patricia Wren, Donald DeVore, Olivia DeChristian, thank you all for being part of the show today.
Thank you.
And the Mark Steiner Show, I want to remind you all to join us. Sixth Annual Political Summit, 443-934-1111 for tickets so you can ask the governor the questions you want to ask next Wednesday morning in Annapolis. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy, engineered by Zachary Coleman, interns are Judith Lloyd and Christina Arison, theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear other interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Thank you.